You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. A quick look at the markets. Oil is up, so is gold. Asian markets rose about 1% overnight, and the rest of the world is getting ready to see what Congress is going to come up with. The devil is in the details of the $700 billion rescue plan sent to Congress by the administration over the weekend. And those details are bedeviling everything from the financial markets to the presidential campaign. And we're going to talk about all of it. First up, though, two remaining investment banks, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, have been declared bank holding companies, which means, according to the Federal Reserve, that they will be regulated by the Fed, not the Securities and Exchange Commission. Seems like one way of getting around Congress changing the regulations for investment banks. But to find out what's really going on, we asked New York Times reporter Stephen Labaton to join us from Washington. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, John.
First of all, let's take the Morgan and Goldman story. I mean, how quickly am I going to see a Goldman Sachs ATM on my street? And what does this actually mean?
It's a remarkable development in 2 weeks of remarkable developments because it will result in more regulation of these institutions. It will institutionalize a relationship between them and the Fed and will perhaps most importantly, limit their so-called leverage, the amount of money they're able to borrow, and as such could begin to reduce some of their outsized profits of the last decade.
Does this represent something of an end run around Congress, which if they'd done it the other way, they would have had to basically declare the Glass-Steagall Act invalid and do all sorts of legislation?
Well, Glass-Steagall was largely overridden by Congress some years ago, but what it does certainly change the regulatory landscape in a way that Congress had been reluctant to do it. It's just that events on Wall Street are moving so much faster than events on Washington.
Well, let's talk about the bailout then. $700 billion rescue plan. The federal government is authorized to buy so-called distressed assets. Does this mean that everybody who holds mortgage-backed securities is going to immediately get on the phone to some 202 area code number and unload them on Henry Paulson?
Well, I think a lot of people who have them that have been weighing down on their books will be looking at whether they should do it. Now, the government in executing this plan is probably not going to pay 100 cents on the dollar. So you're a businessman and you're going to have to think long and hard about the value of going through this. But if you're facing real problems with liquidity at your company and you want to unload them at a certain cost to you, you'll have an opportunity to do that.
Now, who sets the price? Does Congress set the guidelines for the federal government naming the price? Is it up to Henry Paulson and the Fed to determine the price? What sort of congressional mechanism is going to determine how much the government ends up paying for these securities?
The way the plan is now being contemplated, the government will hire a collection of investment management firms, like the firms that are now holding Bear Stearns' mortgage assets, some of them. And those companies, those collection, will each individually have mechanisms for buying them. One thing that's being talked about is a so-called reverse auction, which would say, okay, we're going to buy X type of mortgage-backed securities. Who is the low bidder among you, and we'll pick and choose. So there are market mechanisms to do it. It won't be done by Congress or the Treasury, but it will be executed by a collection of investment management firms.
Stephen, it feels like a big circle. So in other words, the same people who made the decisions that led to this crisis are now the same people who are going to be fixing it. And meanwhile, the same people are going to be benefiting from the government stepping in and trying to fix this. Is that right?
Well, undoubtedly, there'll be some winners out of this who manage these mortgage-backed securities. I think the short answer is, with the credit markets so frozen last week and the fear of real catastrophic economic consequences if the government didn't do something to unfreeze them, that there are very few alternatives. So they had to come up with a plan quickly that would in some way move this market off of the position it had become.
And let's not forget, this doesn't guarantee that the credit markets unfreeze or won't freeze again, 2 weeks from now. I guess from the consumer's perspective, and as we begin to contemplate what the Democrats are going to say about this if they get serious in the details of this proposal, why wouldn't the federal government just have come in and bought $700 billion worth of homes?
Well, I think the problem is not in the first instance a frozen home market, although it's devalued prices. It's that in the credit markets, which are the lifeblood of the economy, which enable retailers, wholesalers, and banks to meet their short-term daily requirements, those had completely frozen. And so I do think the Democrats are going to try to insert something in the plan that offers some form of direct assistance to mortgage holders who are facing or unable to make their monthly payments. But that's going to be a relatively minor component of the package.
Stephen, let's listen to what John McCain and Barack Obama have said needs to happen, because interestingly enough, there are some great points of agreement.
I respect and admire Secretary Paulson, but as far as I can tell, we're placing all those responsibilities in the hands of one person. I think we need to appoint an oversight board of the most respected people in America so that there can be some kind of oversight of, instead of just putting all this responsibility on a person who may be gone in 4 months.
If this is done properly, then the expenditure should not be $700 billion. But that's why it's important to have oversight.
Now, those were the candidates speaking to your colleague, John Harwood. What do you make of their responses?
I think that's that what both of them are saying is going to happen. Barney Frank yesterday, in outlining his proposal and the leading Democrats, and has had a large role for the Government Accountability Office, which is the accounting arm of Congress. I think there's every expectation, and I think the administration anticipates, that there will be some sort of congressional oversight mechanism. Having said that, I still think that the current and, in particular, next Treasury Secretary of the United States is going to be an incredibly important person now and play a role that's not been played perhaps since Alexander Hamilton.
Well, he's more important than the outgoing president, at least judging by the talk shows this weekend in Washington. Is it curious to you, Stephen, that the candidates seem to be taking a very sort of reactive stance in all this and not proposing plans of their own? Because this is a gigantic initiative to enact in the last hours of an administration.
I think it is a gigantic program to do in the last hours, and I think the candidates are being more reactive than proactive on this front. But I think both of them are in daily contact with Treasury Secretary Paulson, and both of them have largely, I think, made a political calculation that this is the kind of story that they can't get out in front with their own competing proposals, other than to tinker at the margin, such as to say we need more oversight or we need to do something with the Securities and Exchange Commission or that sort of thing.
Well, just a couple of months ago, it seemed like the campaign was eclipsing the U.S. government. Now the situation is completely reversed. I mean, I that's unprecedented all by itself.
Well, when you have a situation where the chairman of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Secretary are telling lawmakers, as they were last week, that unless something is done rather quickly, you can have a catastrophic economic event, it sort of sobers the mind.
Sobers the mind, yeah. That's about right. Stephen Labaton from the New York Times, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Stephen Labaton is a reporter from Washington, D.C., reporting on the lawmakers' attempt on Capitol Hill today to begin ironing out the details of a $700 billion rescue plan, along with the change of two banks, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. They are now in bank holding companies subject to full regulation under the Federal Reserve.
And I think you've been making this point for some time, which is these issues are so enormous that they really do feel bigger than the individual candidates, because you're talking about institutions that are changing in ways that we haven't seen in nearly a century.
It's the incredible shrinking presidential campaign. And our guest tomorrow on the program is Barney Frank, who's the Democratic chairman of the Financial Services Committee in the House. He's one of the legislators who's actually beginning this process of writing the $700 billion rescue plan. Do you have a question for him? You should call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Your questions for Bonnie Frank tomorrow, but let's start taking them today right here on The Takeaway.
I mean, Congress has days, if not hours, to come up with a plan, given the fact that they were supposed to go on break next week, right, as they go home and try to campaign for an election that's taking place in 6 weeks.
I can't believe they'll do this in days. But, you know, stranger things have happened this year, and September isn't even over.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.